tuning in, everyone. As a reminder, we are recording via Google Hangouts, so the audio quality may be a little different than what you're used to. We thank you for your patience, understanding, and support during this time. Today's episode is going to be a little bit different. Rather than being joined by a guest and another host, it will just be me. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. My name is Bethany. I am a library assistant at Mesa County Libraries, and I am one of the hosts of the podcast. Today, I'm going to give you an update on the curbside pickup service being offered by Mesa County Libraries and tell you about a project that my mom and I started in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. As of Monday, May 11th, Mesa County Libraries is offering some sort of curbside pickup for holds at each of our locations. When your holds are ready for pickup, you will receive some sort of notification, whether that be by phone or email, telling you to call the location that the holds are ready for pickup at to schedule an appointment. You must schedule an appointment. Please do not drop in without calling first, because we have systems in place to keep staff and patrons safe that we need to follow. The hours differ between locations, so I recommend heading to mesacountylibraries.org, clicking on the COVID-19 Information and Library Updates banner at the top of the page, and then clicking the Library Services tab to see the hours and phone numbers for each location. This is a contactless service, meaning that physical interaction between staff and patrons will be limited, if any. For instance, at the central location, patrons are being asked to wait in their car and tell staff back away before they can get out of their car to retrieve their holds from the table nearby. We ask for your patience as we continue navigating service during the COVID-19 pandemic, and thank you for your cooperation, patience, and support. We cannot wait to see you all back at the library in the future when it is safe to do so. Now on to the project that my mom and I started. On April 3rd, 2020, Colorado Governor Jared Polis announced the Colorado Mask Project. This project was in response to the evidence that asymptomatic individuals, meaning people with the virus but not showing any symptoms, were spreading the virus quickly. The thought was, if everyone wears a face mask, the risk of transmission between individuals is much smaller. Therefore, everyone was asked to wear a mask when performing essential activities, or really any time they left their house. Like many other people, neither my mom nor I had masks handy. Luckily, we had, and still have, an abundance of material and supplies from my grandma. She passed away a few years ago and left us with a shed full of sewing materials and supplies. And when I say shed full, I literally mean a shed full. Both of us were seeing tutorials pop up on how to make face masks at home, and we had all the supplies necessary, so we decided to give it a shot. It started off small, with us sending a couple to my sister and her wife in California. Then I had the brilliant idea to make a post on Facebook saying that we were making masks and would give them to people for free. I also sent a district-wide email to my colleagues saying the same thing. In hindsight, this might not have been the best idea because we were quickly flooded with requests. Up to this point, I had mainly been helping to cut the material and elastic and get it ready for my mom to sew. When we got so many requests, I figured I could help her sew a few. I mean, it had only been 10 years since I had used a sewing machine, and I didn't remember it being that hard. Turns out, I'm still not good at sewing. My mom ended up sewing more than 50 masks by herself in 2 days. I basically took the orders, prepped the materials, and supplied her with coffee and food, which I think is an important job. After the masks were finished, I delivered them to people's doorsteps. I went all over the valley, from Fruta to Clifton to Orchard Mesa, and dropped them off. Many of the requests came from friends or coworkers of mine that had susceptible family members, and several people offered to pay us for our work. The project didn't stop there. By early May, my mom will have made around 150 masks for people, 75 of which I took to the library upon reopening to staff. She also made quite a few for our family, her friends, and her coworkers. We may end up making more as the pandemic and personal protective equipment shortage continues. Aside from teaching me that I can't sew, and that offering free services on Facebook is maybe not the greatest idea, this project taught me a lot about compassion. We were both navigating the world of working from home and the challenges that go along with that. For instance, my mom is a teacher and is currently still learning how to navigate the world of distance learning with her students. It didn't stop my mom, however, from dedicating her free time to helping others. We did receive donations, thank you cards, and social media shoutouts, but I think we both agree that helping our friends, colleagues, and families stay safe is much more important to us than anything else. As we begin navigating our transition back into the public, I ask you to consider the safety of your friends, your families, and your colleagues. Pay attention to your health department, follow suggested guidelines, and continue wearing masks and social distancing until we are told it is safe to stop. Above all else, be kind, be understanding, and be compassionate. Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in. As a reminder, we are recording via Google Hangouts, so the audio quality may be a little different than what you're used to. We thank you for your patience, understanding, and support during this time. Today, I am joined by the amazing Trevor, who is a library associate at Mesa County Libraries. You may recognize him from some of the previous podcasts we've done or from our live story times on social media. Hi, Trevor. Thanks for joining.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Of course. We're always happy to have you on, Trevor. We're also joined by Emmy, who is the communications coordinator at Mesa County Libraries. Hi, Emmy.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we're happy to have you on. Continuing with our doc theme where we talk to staff about what they're up to during the COVID-19 pandemic, Trevor is going to tell us about a project that he started to stay connected with people during the pandemic. So let's get into it. Do you want to give us a little bit of an overview to start about what this project was that you began?
Yeah, well, I'm a collage artist in my free time away from the library. And a lot of times I'll make really small collages. And actually, a few years ago, I realized that I had been making a bunch of just small pieces, almost sort of like sketches, nothing that I was planning on doing anything big or serious with. I realized that they were in the about the size of a postcard, and that I could probably mail them to people. Just put on something to seal the collage paper down and then mail it as a postcard. So it's something I had done a few times throughout the years, just made these very small collage pieces and then just mailed them out. And then when we started realizing that we were going to have to be in our houses for really long periods and not seeing our friends nearly as much as we would like to, and then especially when we weren't even able to go into the library, I thought maybe it would be a fun thing to do to stay connected and for me to stay creative at home, was to make these very small collages that were postcard size and just put it out there on social media. Anyone who would like one, just send me a direct message with your address and I'll send you one for free. So that's what I did.
It was such a great idea. And we'll go into that a little bit more in a second. But first, I want you to maybe give us an overview of collaging for someone who's less familiar. And also tell us why you think collaging is so appealing as an art form.
Collage is extremely easy. I believe that everyone is an artist, or everyone can be an artist if they just want to and have something to express. Collage is so great because all it takes is paper and scissors and glue. And you can so easily cut something up and then glue it back down somewhere else onto something else and make it into something new. It's all about taking things out of their original context and using your own creative mind to figure out what would be a neat new context for them to be. That's collage, basically. A lot of collage art is sort of juxtaposition. Like a lot of collage artists love to cut up old magazines and old books and then maybe put it into some sort of unusual background. Like you take an ocean scene for your background and then you cut out a housewife from the 50s vacuuming, glue her on. Ah, she's vacuuming the ocean. Isn't that weird? And a lot of those kinds of collages are great. A lot of that kind of approach to collage is really neat. And I've even done a little bit of that. But there's so many other things that can be done with collage. I mean, the possibilities are as limitless as any art medium, I would say.
And what I think I like about collaging and a lot of art actually is that there's no right or wrong way to do it. And like you just said, people are doing collaging in different ways. So if you don't really find yourself being pulled into one way of collaging, you could do something different. It's all interpretive and based on your likes. Definitely.
Yeah. It really just depends on what you want to do with it too. You know, if you want to be able to make a living entirely from art, then you're going to have to make it a certain way and maybe follow certain guidelines to make something that is going to sell. I feel extremely lucky in that I don't have to make money from my art and I'm able to sell it inexpensively. And then a lot of times like this, just give it away. And that was a fun thing about this project too, is I told people that they could request a piece, but that they could request that I send them a piece, but they couldn't request which piece I sent them. And I tried to kind of pair the pieces with, it was almost all people I knew, with something I thought they would like, but sometimes it was pretty much random. And so I'm not worrying too much if it's the greatest postcard collage that has ever been made, just something that I thought that person would think was fun when it arrived in the mails, hopefully put a smile on their face and maybe they thought was neat.
I definitely want to include some pictures when we do the social media posting for this. Mine, I love that it has Tootsie Pop roll wrappers on it. it was such a good juxtaposition between like the really shiny foil that's on there also. But also I just love Tootsie Pop, so I really liked that.
I think the shiny foil may have been from some junk mail.
Ooh.
I think my partner Megan got some junk mail that was like for some makeup or something. So the envelope was kind of glittery or shiny. I get a lot of collage fodder from junk mail. In fact, I just got a bunch of junk mail today, and some of it had some neat stuff that I want to cut up. And a lot of it is little postcard size, so I'll just collage over whatever the business was trying to sell me something. I'll just make that into a collage.
What a great way to repurpose something that you normally would have just thrown away.
I love that about this. You know, I really love using things that would have been thrown away. I wasn't originally, when I first started making collage art a few years ago, I didn't have that in mind exactly, but I was pretty nervous not having any experience in visual art, any training. And I didn't want to spend any money. I didn't want to spend a bunch of money on supplies, not knowing what I was doing, because I thought it was entirely possible that I would try it and not be happy with it at all. So I just started pulling stuff out of my recycling bin. So just packaging, a lot of cereal box packaging, has neat colors and textures on it. So it's fun to cut it up and glue it back down.
I want to go back to something that I just thought of. So you said that you made them based on what you think people would like or just based on what you knew about them. So what I'm getting is that you think I'm a glittery junk person who likes Tootsie Pops.
Well, I didn't sit down and go, okay, Bethany, okay. I've got a clean canvas here. Bethany, Bethany, and then go over to all of my supplies and pick out things It was more like I got the message from you and said you wanted something, and I had a bunch that were done and ready to be sent. I went, which one of these? Bethany will probably like this one, I think. Yeah.
Well, good. I will say, though, that that's a fairly accurate representation of me, so oh, it's totally good. Fine. So how did you discover, I know you talked about trying to find something that wasn't that expensive, and you also didn't maybe have visual art skills. How did you really discover that you preferred collage over something different, like painting, for instance?
Well, I've always had an interest in arts, in all arts, really, and have done some of them throughout my life. But I've mostly been a performing artist, a singer, an actor, drummer, and I've always really loved visual art, but never felt drawn to do it. Never felt like I could draw or paint or anything like that, and just never really had an interest to do it myself. And I actually don't remember the exact impetus for starting collage. I know that working at a library where you see a lot of books get withdrawn, where maybe they are really old and worn out, or maybe the cover is moldy, or the cover is torn. So they definitely can't be used or resold, but they do have pages inside that are still good. So maybe I would find a picture book every once in a while and realize, oh, the picture, there's some pictures inside this, this torn up book that would be really neat. You could take them out of this context and do something with them, maybe even just frame them or something. And I kind of had that idea and made a few little things like that, where I would just cut something out of an old picture book and put it in a frame or something. And then I think I just realized that making collage was a way that I could do something creative, express myself, and make something. And I could do it at home by myself, because I've always been in bands or plays where you have to go somewhere else. You have to do it with people. It takes a lot of coordinating, and it's great. I'm in a band right now, and that's great. But being able to do something creative at home by yourself and spending almost no money on it, that really appealed to me. That's one of the main reasons that I've stayed doing it for, I think, about 6 years now.
So it sounds like a really great activity for people who are looking for something to do right now, if they are still staying at home. And yeah, because there's little to no cost, as you said, and you can do it alone if you would prefer. So you draw some of your inspiration from the materials you pull, but do you go in when you're making a collage with an idea of what the layout is going to be, or is it something that you come up with as you're working on the collage?
I mostly come up with it as I'm working on it. Occasionally, I'll have a kind of rough idea of shapes or rough idea of the composition that I want to make. But a lot of times I really just embrace randomness and embrace chance. That's something I definitely embraced when I first started out, because I really didn't know what I was doing. So I realized, well, I'm just going to put stuff down, just cut stuff up and glue it down, and we'll just see, without really worrying too much in advance what it will look like. And, you know, that's a great thing about making abstract art, is it doesn't need to be anything. If it's going to be abstract, it doesn't have to look like, you know, someone's face or a flower or a tree or something like that. It's okay that it's just a bunch of lines or just a bunch of colors and textures and designs. So I like that. I like not knowing exactly what it's going to be at first.
I think I would struggle with that at first, just because I'm an obsessive planner. I like to know how things are going to be before I start. But I think this would be a good activity for people like myself to really tune into our artistic sides and not be so worried about making sure that we have everything planned out before. So definitely we'll be giving it a try after this.
Great.
And I'll have to send you what I make. I also got a bunch of junk mail yesterday. I got a bunch of junk mail yesterday, so that must have been a thing that they were doing.
So, Trevor, since you've been doing collage, do you feel like the way that you think about things, like the way you make a meal or the way you do your job, has changed because of your creative process in the collage world? Like, does that affect other aspects of your life?
Wow, that's a really interesting question.
Yeah, it's pretty profound.
I don't know. I would have to think about that. I feel that that's the kind of question where I feel like if I thought about it more, I might realize, oh, of course, yes, it's affected this and this. It's
probably really subconscious and you wouldn't notice it until, like, I don't know, you're layering a salad or something. And you're like, oh, the carrot slivers, like, at a certain direction. Right.
No, you know what? To be honest, I think the answer is probably no, except I think something kind of like what you're talking about happened, but going back farther, I never studied any visual art, but I studied dance and choreography and theater and a little bit of music. And this one specific choreography class that I took in college was about composition. And the ideas you use to make a dance piece good and the compositional ideas that apply to dance apply to collage art too. So when I'm looking at a blank piece of paper or cardboard or whatever I'm about to start gluing on, I think about it the same way that I used to think about a stage when I was deciding where to put the dancers back when I used to do choreography. So that has been interesting to me, how that's just started. I noticed it just starting to come into my head without me really being fully aware of it at first. And then I realized, oh, wow, yeah, that's something I learned at Mesa back in 95 or something.
Yeah, well, just how all art, whether or not you realize it, like, it builds on itself. So you learned how to compose, like, you know, actual composition of a stage. Well, that's normally a rectangle. What else is a rectangle? Every canvas you'll use in collage. So that's interesting. Yeah. That's cool that you're able to look back and pull from those sources.
Yeah, it's neat. I'm thankful to have that to inform what I'm doing now.
Very insightful, Emmy.
I try.
So, Trevor, let's talk more about the project that we talked about a little bit before. You said that you posted on social media saying, DM me your address and I will send you a postcard. Did you find that you got a lot of requests for these postcards?
Yeah, but they came in kind of slowly. It wasn't like there was a huge rush. You know, it's something I had done before when I, maybe a year or so ago, when I just realized that I had way too many collages that were postcard sized. And I realized I don't need all these. I probably won't have a chance to sell them or show them or anything. So I'll just see if people want them. So I had done this before and sent out, I don't know, maybe a dozen that time. Maybe not even that many. This time I thought it would probably be kind of like that, you know, like I'll just send out a few, not expecting to get a huge response from it. Not really expecting anything. But then I realized that I really enjoyed it and realized I already had a lot. I probably had 40, maybe about 40 or so. May have been more than that. I'm not sure. And then I just made more posts on Instagram and Facebook, like once a week. I think maybe what helped was I was showing the work I was making, like, here's a bunch of postcards I just made. If you would like one of these, just send me your address. So then they started coming in, requests started coming in more and more. And I also just sent some to people without them even requesting. Or I contacted people and were like, hey, You've said that you like my work before. I'm giving out postcards. Would you like one? And I ended up, I think I only did it for the first 2 weeks since the stay-at-home order happened. And I ended up sending 110,
which was
way more than I expected. And it didn't feel like a lot because it was I was enjoying it so much and, of course, had the time to do it since there's only so much work I can do from home.
Exactly.
And I had, like I said, I had quite a few already made. It was really fun and the response was really neat. And I'm still getting contacted by people with photos of them holding the postcard that they got, which has been really, really delightful. I've loved that. People have been getting creative with it. In a couple, my friends had their child holding the postcard. And one, my friend's cat was there with the postcard in the photo. So that's been really, really fun. Because I never know how long it's going to take. Some of them sending just a few blocks away. One of them, I'm still waiting to find out from my friend in Sweden that he's received that one. That was definitely the farthest one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a good way also to interact with people that you don't normally interact with regularly. People that maybe you haven't talked to in a while are reaching out, and then you get that back and forth where they get the postcard and then show you that they got it, and really help strengthen those relationships that you have with other people.
Yeah, that was really great. That has been and continues to be really great, but especially at first, because someone would send me the message saying, "Hey, I'd like a postcard. Here's my address." And then I would say, "Great, and how are you doing? And what's going on in your life?" And then I get to tell them what's going on in my life. And there were dozens of interactions like that, which were so great. I just really enjoyed it.
Was Sweden also the most interesting place you sent a postcard to?
Yeah, probably. That's pretty interesting. The address was pretty confusing. I had to double check with him that I was writing it down right, because it's not written like we would write it.
Huh.
And also the names he gave me, I didn't recognize the names. So I was like, who are you having me send this to? And then I realized it was his kids' names. He wanted me to send them to his kids, and his kids have a different surname than him. I think surnames must work differently in Sweden. So that was interesting. I think a couple of interesting ones were just people that I didn't know asking for them, which was really great because a lot of us collage artists follow each other on Instagram, and I have an Instagram page just for my collage art. So using hashtags, you know, collage artists randomly come across my stuff. And there were a few who asked for one, and I don't know who they are at all other than they're a fellow collager.
That's so cool that it brought together people in your immediate like friend group or family group, but also brought in other artists who are supporting you in that way. I really like that.
Well, you know, a couple that really surprised me that I thought was really sweet was I had a couple of different friends who asked me to send postcards to their family members who I had never met and probably will never meet. They're people who live states away.
Oh, wow.
Both of two or three contacted me and said, "Hey, my mom or my sisters, they're alone. They're really not doing very well. They would really appreciate this. It would really brighten their day. Would you send them a collage?" And I was delighted to do that. You know, that's wonderful. I was so happy to do that, even though I, you know, didn't know them at all. But hey, why not? It's only maybe a dollar in postage.
That's so lovely of you and them to also think about their family in that way. And props to you, Trevor.
Thanks.
So I also want to know what you gained from doing this project. Like how did this help you as a person?
Well, it gave me something to focus on right at first when I first suddenly was at home every day rather than going to work every day. Even though I was and continue to do some work from home, it's really not very much. So giving me something creative to do, to kind of give my daily life a sense of purpose and to be connected to people, it just made me feel great, and kept me from getting too down about this scary time that we're all going through. And of course, with any art, practice doesn't make perfect exactly, but practice is good. You know, the more you work on something, the better you get at it. So it was just an opportunity to just create more and make more and work at it and hopefully get better at it.
I think it really says a lot about you that you found something to keep you busy, but also something that would impact others. And that just shows what kind of person that you are. And I think we're so lucky to have you and everybody else at the library who also works the same way, as a part of the team.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I'm definitely very much of a people person. And I think that's probably true of most, if not all, of the people who work at the library. We really care about people, and other people mean a lot to us, and we like being connected to them. And it feels really weird to not be seeing so many people every day like we're used to.
It does feel weird. I know when I saw you yesterday at work, when we were both at work for a while, it was so nice to see someone in person rather than just on my computer.
Yeah, it was great seeing people yesterday. I just loved it. It was awesome.
It was. I think I may speak for a lot of people when I say, Trevor, we would appreciate a collage program at some point. I think that would be awesome if, because you're a great teacher also, if you would be interested in maybe doing something like that.
Well, you know, back when I used to have it was only a few weeks ago, but had my weekly Thursday night kids and family program, Neighbors Read, every single week we had the program. So it would be hard to find a guest sometime for the program, or sometimes an emergency would happen, or for whatever reason, the guest wouldn't be able to come. So on pretty much all of those occasions when I suddenly didn't have someone, we would just make collage because we already have all the supplies at the library. So, so I've done that with kids a few times, and that's fun because it's one of those things where you don't need to tell kids anything. You just, here's some paper, here's glue and scissors, make whatever you want. And they go to town. It's awesome.
The only rule is don't eat the glue. Otherwise, have fun.
Right. And hopefully not cut yourself.
We have scissors. Yeah. I wanted to ask you a couple questions about the live story times that you're also doing. I know I mentioned that at the beginning. So for those who aren't familiar, what is the library doing in terms of story times during this time where we can't have gatherings at the library?
So right now, those of us throughout the district, not just from Central, but from branches as well, those of us who would normally be hosting Storytime in person, we are live streaming Storytime from our homes. So on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday mornings at 10, one of us will be hosting Storytime. Wednesdays, they're always Spanish or bilingual. So Sandra is doing those. I think she's our only bilingual employee who's able to do those. I'm pretty sure it's always Sandra on Wednesdays, but then one of the rest of us does them on Tuesday and Thursday. And that's really fun. It's been very strange. When we first started putting story times online, we were doing them from the 970 West studio at the library, which was great because we had the technical services team in charge of all the audio video. People from my department just had to go in and do story time, basically. Mm-hmm. And they took care of all the technical aspect. and it looked really great and sounded really great. So now it's a little bit tougher when we're at home with our phones or our laptops or whatever device, and just having to make sure that we're live streaming in a way that represents the library well and also looks good for kids. I think we're doing a pretty good job. You know, every time I do one, I've only done two, so two, three.
I think anyway. You've done
a handful. Three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, every time, you know, I think, oh, why didn't I do it this way? I'll do that different next time. But I'm so glad we're able to do it. I'm so glad that it's something rather than just having nothing for the kids in place of story time. And the response has been really big. We have quite a few people watching them as they're being streamed, but then they stay up on Facebook for a few days, and then dozens, I think we've had at least one video that got up to 100 too. So that's pretty amazing when you think that if we were just hosting the story time at the library, there might only be, you know, 10, 20, 30 kids actually there watching it.
Well, I can tell you from an analytical standpoint, because I look at those stats somewhat regularly. We get people viewing from all over the United States. It's really fun. You know, some people used to live in Mesa County, but maybe now they're in Moab. But they continue to follow us on social media because we still have some online resources. So when we started doing live story time, people were freaking out. they were so excited to be able to see Cindy again or Trevor again, or, you know, our Spanish patrons in particular. The first day that we did a live stream in Spanish, we got calls to the call center, and it was whoever was in the call center, you know, knew high school Spanish. And they're like, I was able to somewhat translate that. They were very thankful for that service. And we've even had people message either us or, you know, the different story time presenters. And there was one patron in particular whose child is autistic and can't come to library because of all the sensory things and having that many people in the area. And they were just so thankful that they could live stream and this person could now participate in story time, because before that wasn't an option for them. So,
wow.
Like you said, that's Trevor, neat. Sometimes, you know, maybe we'll get 5, 10, 15 people in at one of our physical locations for story time. But now by the end of the week, over 1,000 people have seen it. We even had a comment today that's like, my kids and I have been rewatching this one story time, like, just that good. Yeah. So I think that's awesome. We're still able to, yeah, reach our patrons. And I think because you were one of the first ones to do it in the studio, and then you did some of the first couple ones from home, people were just like, we love Trevor. I mean, they were like that way before. I think it just goes to show how much we're connected with our library patrons, even from a virtual space.
Definitely. And as unfortunate as this situation is for a lot of different reasons, I think it's also helped us at the library explore different ways to provide services to our patrons, especially like that example you gave, Emmy, of the autistic individual who couldn't enjoy story times previously. So I'm excited to see what the library is going to do to continue innovating and providing services, and definitely check our social media and check our library website to keep up to date with all the things that we're going to be offering to help everyone through this new time and continue to offer in the future, most likely.
Yeah, absolutely. With the exception of some of our live story times, those live programs that for copyright reasons, you know, we can't keep up. All of those archived videos are either on a playlist on our YouTube channel or Facebook or our Instagram TV. So you can always go back and watch those and follow along. If there's an activity, you can do it with your family. The whole point is making it accessible to you in a time that works for you. So even if you can't make the 10 a.m. live stream story time, just know it'll be there. You get off work at 5 and you can snuggle in after dinner and do it with your kids.
Bedtime story with Mr. Trevor.
Trevor, wear your pajamas.
So before we end out, I wanted to just plug some of our resources that we have, especially if you're interested in collaging and you don't really know where to start. You can check out lynda.com on our website if you go to the e-resources page and then go to L for Lynda. When I searched collaging, my search came up with quite a few results, and those were in the beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And like Trevor said, this is something that you can put your own spin on, so you don't necessarily have to follow these videos, but it could give you a good idea of where to start if you're stuck. Also, be sure to check out our social media. Like I mentioned, continue watching for Mr. Trevor's story times. Like he said, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday is when story time is offered at 10 a.m. And that's all I have.
And once the library is open again, we have lots of great books on collage, not only in our collection, but also in libraries that we're connected to in their collections. So when you do a search just for collage, you can see all kinds of different. Yeah, it's a lot. And some of it is just to give you an idea of what people have done with collage art. And some of it is more like how to's, but it just depends what you want to do with it.
Thank you so much, Mr. Trevor and Emmy, for joining. I really appreciate it. And
thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Of course. Thanks, Emmy.
Thanks, Bethany.
And we will be back again with another episode soon.